It's now time to think outside the box of what we've always known.
I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord.
I think that's a profound turning point in somebody's relationship with God.
And our hope in starting this was that this would become an ever-expanding conversation.
Just two real guys talking about life. That's a nice tagline.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to another edition of The God Journey.
You gotta love that funky intro. I just dig it.
Man, you are all over that thing.
I do. I like it.
It doesn't take me to my happy place as much as the other one, but...
Oh, but your shirt does.
Oh, get off this shirt.
It says, I podcast.
It does.
I podcast. That's good. I love that.
Too bad we don't have a web camera in here, so everybody can share in this beautiful shirt.
Yeah, I look a little grungy, though.
Man, you are a mess. What have you been doing?
I've been making some cement sidewalks for the Jacobsons.
Ah, that's right. You've been here all week.
You were my worker.
You know, it's weird, because I'm the owner, and then I'm the grunt worker, and it was disgusting.
You just have wheelbarrow skills like few others out there, Wayne.
I'm sure if Jesus were alive today, John 15 would say, greater love hath no man than this, that a man does cement for his brother. Because cement work and moving are about the two worst jobs in the world.
I've done both for you, pal.
Oh, isn't that amazing? Have I done any of that for you?
not once.
Well, at least I'm paying you for this. How's that?
Oh, well, that's wonderful, and it's much appreciated.
At least ostensibly I'm paying
you. Yes.
We haven't got there yet. But, yeah, we're getting a little cement work done around here because Sarah's just got a yard thing going on.
So. Truthfully, Wayne didn't like pushing his lawnmower over the bump of pavers.
Actually, it wasn't the lawnmower that was the problem. It was those garbage cans when they were heavy. Trying to get those over those. They were like stepping stones spaced at an odd. It was a mess.
Now they got the Cadillac of sidewalks.
So believe me, you don't want to journey that way. There's just no way to go.
So you just had an anniversary, Wayne.
31 years. Can you
believe
it? Man, we...
Sarah's staying with you for at least another?
I did. I renewed her contract for one more year, so we'll see.
Extended.
She actually has heard that before.
Yeah. Did she extend your contract? You extend hers.
She's never rude enough to say it, but I'm sure it actually works the other way around. No, we gave her a year extension, so hopefully things will continue to work out.
So you're advocating a one-year renewable?
Oh, keeps them on their toes. That's
okay.
Actually, Sarah and I, in fact, we didn't spend very much of yesterday together, our actual 31st anniversary. She was busy at work, and then she had a meeting at the Reagan Presidential Library last night with seniors that were getting honored in various ways and given money and scholarships and things. So she was there. But we spent some wonderful moments in the morning while Sarah was painting her face, as we normally do in the morning, and talked about this journey and talked about how after 31 years, we've landed in a place now where we're probably more each other's best friend than ever and more in love than ever. And so excited that somehow through all the twists and turns of this marriage, we've ended up in a place of just absolute joy right now. And compatibility and companionship on the journey and being on the same page about so many things, which has not always been true of our married life. But we're enjoying that. We found ourselves just incredibly grateful yesterday of all that God's taken us through, and somehow through the twists and turns. And there was a couple of years in there that actually, to be honest, I wasn't sure our marriage was going to get through it. We'd been through some very hurtful things, just with some of the places I had been working and some of that. And Sarah had gone through the death of her parents and some other things in her personal life that made her really reassess who Sarah was on the planet. And we talked about that partly when she was on the podcast, but just to refresh for some folks, she realized that she had been living everyone else's expectations for her life and not God's, not what God had in mind for her. And she had no idea who she was. And that was a very crushing time for her. Her parents had passed away, and she was trying to sort out who she was, and there were some other family issues going on. And even when I tried to help her through that, everything I tried to say to her was just seemed like...
It wasn't working, huh?
I was trying to manipulate the outcome. And, you know, me, manipulate? I don't even know where she'd get that idea.
Oh, Wayne.
Obviously, I had been part of the problem. Not because I ever wanted to, but because she thought I had expectations and she was trying to fit those instead of be who God made her to be. Part of that was pretty painful. I remember a couple of times looking at her and just saying, darling, is our marriage going to survive this? And she says, what do you mean? I said, are we going to come out on the same team? And She would always look at me with like, oh, yeah, of course we will. But I tell you what, I just never, I thought I was the enemy at some parts of that. And I tried to be as hands-off as I could and supportive as I could. And I guess we're grateful. We were grateful for yesterday's through all those things. We've been through tragedies. We've been through painful times. We've been through very joyful, good times. But somehow in all that, Sarah and I have just kept drawing closer together and kept finding our way back to the same path together and the same journey. And now, 31 years into that process, we have just sat back and just said, man, isn't the fruit of that now? I mean, we, Sarah and I have got all kinds of stuff that we enjoy. We enjoy being together. We enjoy every chance we get to communicate with each other. All kinds of little private jokes that no one else understands or gets or knows. But we are just having as much fun as ever. Feel like each of us are very, very supported by the other in things God's doing in our lives. So, yeah, we had a great day celebrating yesterday.
That's a neat moment to be able to kind of look back, reflect, and recognize that God's been forging a pretty neat friendship.
Yeah, even though we didn't get to go anywhere, we didn't even get to have dinner together last night, but we're going to make up for it this weekend.
Party, party.
Well, I hope so. But, you know, as we were talking about it, we were also talking about other marriages that we know are not at that point right now or going through some difficult struggles, and it made us also really care about that, and people who, for whatever reason, aren't on the same page, and it feels like even when they go through tragedy, they're just pulling each other apart, and they grow distant from each other. And
you can't really force that, can you?
No, you can't force people to be on the same page with you, unfortunately.
And I don't know that it's always essential. I mean, it's enjoyable when you're both heading down the same path, but I think when we try to make each other in our own image, we do a pretty messed up job of it. Because I think God is not always doing the same thing in each one of us.
No, I think that's true. And what Sarah and I have learned through some of that is instead of trying to get your partner to be on your page, you know, that your support and love for them is for their journey, not them on yours. And so Sarah and I have learned through some of this and to really, you know, she's my partner. I promise to love her through good and bad, up and down.
Backwards, forwards.
Richer for poorer, the whole lot. We all promise that stuff. And sometimes we, in the control of it and thinking that somehow my personal happiness resides in Sarah being the same page as I am, there were times I just had to really let her go and support her as a person, not support where I thought she might end up. And it's been amazing how that has sorted out. But I think you're right. There is absolutely no way to make somebody. The more you try to push somebody onto the pathway you want them on, not only the further do they get from it, I think that's true, but the more you destroy the relationship actually becomes dysfunctional and unhealthy, and you're actually producing the very opposite of what you hope to be doing.
Yeah, there's built-up resentment, and just that you mentioned that word, the C word, control.
Yeah.
And man, is that ever pervasive. Yeah. Kelly and I have done a lot of premarital counseling over the years, and if we were to sum up the purpose of marriage in a word, it'd be the word transformation.
Wow.
And when you recognize what God is trying to do, you know, it'd be great if the goal was happiness, but good luck trying to get there and making that the goal. I mean, I think that's the byproduct, not the goal.
Yeah, that's what the weddings are all about. Yeah, this is going to be bliss forever. They never tell you.
They live happily ever after.
This is actually going to hurt. This is actually going to stretch you. God's going to actually take the person he's given to you, and they're part of your being in the crucible of change, because adjusting to another life and living with another life in partnership, it's not all bliss.
Yeah, and someone who's there 24 hours a day, talk about exposed. Good, bad, and ugly. Yeah, you can't hide there. you got to deal with it. And I think that when that's embraced, that thing becomes perhaps one of the most powerful relationships you could ever enter into, because if you can take the performance out of it and you can realize, you know what, this person has pledged to love me regardless. That alone can be really transformational. When you can rest in that, you can enjoy the fruit of that. So,
and then get the control out of it, which is a whole other deal.
Yeah.
Leave that aside and just say, gosh, here's someone I love. I've pledged my life to. And even if they don't quite end up, I mean, at least Paul seemed to, and Peter both, talk in language that a marriage can be wonderful even if one of them isn't a believer. They don't obviously recommend starting that way, but if you find yourself in that situation or find, you know, there's enough love of just the person God's given you. The whole idea that they have to be theologically compatible, we have to be on the same spiritual journey, is really not true. You don't have to be to have a great marriage, to have a great life. And, of course, a believer is going to want their partner to become a believer. But that's the other part of you try to push it.
It doesn't work.
Not going to happen. If you live with this, what Peter described, this gentle and quiet spirit, which I think is just a great way to describe it. He kind of aimed it at wives, but I think it's absolutely as appropriate for husbands, too. The gentle and quiet spirit that just loves, supports. I've got a good friend back east that's going through a very painful time in his marriage. His wife decided about a year ago that she was done being married to him, and she was also done with God. They've been believers. They met on the mission field. I mean, and their whole compatibility was marked on this passion for missions. And when she kind of lost her passion for God, she lost her passion for missions, and she lost the whole nature of the relationship, and she's decided it's all pretty unhealthy, and she's leaving it.
Oh, wow. How painful.
And it is very, very painful, and makes matters worse. They're still living in the same house with their, 37 kids or something. Not quite that many, but they got a bundle. And the kids are kind of in the middle of it, sometimes, you know, one side or the other. I can't imagine a more painful thing. Sarah and I were talking about that yesterday when we took the dogs for a walk. I can't imagine anyone being able to hurt me more than Sarah. If Sarah were to betray me, if Sarah were to, you know, walk out on me, I mean, I can't imagine it getting any worse than that.
Wow.
And this brother is going through it. And at the beginning of it, yeah, incredibly panicked. I remember him writing me or calling me and just, I don't know, dude, it's safe to say, I'm makers, you got blah, blah, blah. Somehow, through that, this fall and into the wintertime here. In fact, he's going to be out in California this week, so I may get a chance to see him. But he's found a real peace in loving his wife, even through this process of her leaving him. Just amazing. Still together in the same home, which is weirder than anything I've ever heard of. But they haven't worked out living arrangements with five kids apart from that. And but every email I get from him or a time I talk to him on the phone, I'm so impressed by his struggling through to love what he's losing, but to still love and wrestle with all the honest emotions of that, which I find fascinating. God's love's big enough to get us through marriages. I'm grateful for where Sarah and I are at right now, but I realize other people aren't there, and boy, they just need a whole lot of grace to walk where they walk, and that's part of it too.
Yes, I mean, sometimes life is a four-letter word. And you can just, you know, it's tough to kind of cry. I think our last week's podcast tend to resonate with a whole bunch of folks, didn't it?
Man, I tell you, I've enjoyed the feedback. Almost as not so much for the things we said, actually, but for the things that Shelley said. I think people are thrilled just to hear somebody talk in such honest terms.
A graphic letter.
About their sense of lostness, which I think that was about. And even feeling like maybe God's not on my side here. At least he's being very difficult. And, I mean, I think I love that because whether or not folks are saying it, they're feeling it. And somehow the lie of religion is if you don't say it, God doesn't hear it.
You think he hears hearts, huh?
I think he hears every cry of our heart. And I think the value in speaking out, quite honestly, even if it's in very raw terms, as some people have written to say, hey, thanks for that, man. That I have prayed that stuff thinking I was an idiot. And it's just the reality of if it's already going on in here, if I think God's a jerk and I think God's jerking me around and I don't think he cares, if he exists, he's not involved in my life. And I feel that and it's going on inside. I think the best thing to do is put that out somewhere where God can work on it the way God gets to work on it. I think 1 John, when it talks about walking in the light as he is in the light, I used to think that always meant perfection. I've got to walk in perfection the way he walked in perfection, and, you know, that just has never worked for me.
I'm not sure I can build as I walk.
As much as I want to do that, it's not within me to pull that off. But if it means bring everything into his presence, walk in the light in that sense, then I think what Shelley gave us last week and seemed to open the doors for a lot of other people is God's not afraid of your anger and God's not afraid of your coarse language if that's part of what you're feeling inside. Better to get it out where God can deal with it than ball it up inside where you think he can ignore it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I would advocate railing against God, but the reality is what's so healthy about that is you have to find a point of reality. If that's what you're feeling and that's where you're at, The religious system would basically plaster a smile on you. It's like, well, how's it going? Oh, great, brother. I mean, you're like, oh, fine. And it's like,
things will be well.
Yeah, most people are dying inside, and most people are always, well, you know, I mean, they toss out a glib sense of hope that I'm not sure that they really believe in. And I think we've got to have a starting point of honesty. And that's what I appreciated in Shelley's letter, which is just a sense of, this is what I'm feeling. I know it. God knows it. I've got to say it. I've got to put it out there. And I don't think either you or I think that's the end point there. You know, it's like you're fond of saying that's at the middle of a chapter, not at an end.
Yeah.
I think that's true. But the reality is you don't know exactly how it's going to turn out, but you've got to have a starting point. And if you cannot be honest with God, well, who can you be honest with?
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, he is probably the safest person to vent that kind of stuff towards. And I don't think he wants us to stay there. I don't think he wants us getting stuck there. But it's just so strange that so oftentimes, you know, with our obedience brings blessing and disobedience brings cursing. You know, so many times someone in that kind of predicament gets Job's three friends showing up and basically trying to problem solve them. Like, well, if you were really right with God, you wouldn't be feeling this. You wouldn't, and it's like, you know, that's a bunch of horse bucky.
I keep waiting for the Christian counseling clinic that opens sometime called Job's Advisors, because I think people really miss. These are very religious guys, and they're all willing to jump on somebody in their pain and throw the whole performance motif on them. You say, hey, God's not being mean to you. God's whacking you because you deserve to be whacked. So you better figure out what it is that you did wrong and get it right. And the more he says, no, really, I didn't do anything like that. And they go, see how proud you are? I mean, that religion thing is such a binding, captive thing, because it doesn't matter what you do, you're wrong. And the stress you're in and the trauma you're in, whether it's Shelley's or anybody else that's written us or we've talked to this week, it's because, doggone, you've deserved it. You're not living right. If you're living right, you wouldn't be here. That whole construct of God blesses those in material temporal terms who are doing things his way, and God whacks up on those or withdraws his blessing from those who don't, leaves us.
You're missing the favor of God.
And what it means is every time I hurt is proof that God has abandoned me. Now, where do you go to get help if that's where your theology leads?
Well, it seems like so many people are afraid of the reality of pain. And yet, what I think is the great news of this gospel is that Jesus doesn't abandon us in our pain. He's not afraid of it. He'll crawl inside and be there with us. I mean, I think one of the most poignant things that happened to Kelly and I that kind of taught us this is between Jared and Jonathan, we had another child. And I remember waking up one night having a dream that my wife was pregnant. And in the dream, the Lord actually gave me the name of the child. So in the morning, I kind of said, Kelly, I said, I had the weirdest dream. I said, you know, is there a chance she could be pregnant? Well, she took the test, and the reality is, yeah, she was. Well, somewhere after the first trimester going on into the second, she miscarried. And that was absolutely devastating to us, because it's like it defied everything that we understood. Wait, God initiated this with the dream. He told us what was going on. How could this have ended this way? And I just remember both of us just in our kitchen kind of just hurting. And the presence of God comes into our kitchen and hurts alongside with us. I don't have language. There wasn't a conversation. But it was probably the first time I recognized that God was feeling something with us. And it seemed to me that all of my questions of the why and all, I still don't have any answers for that. They just don't seem to be that important. Because I guess the universe, at least that I live in, not every last little thing that happens was a God-ordained, pre-designed thing, that every last little thing has purpose. I think the T-shirt that says stuff happens, it's a different word.
Yeah.
I'm getting better.
Yeah.
I think to some degree that is true. Stuff does happen, and God will be at work in it. But I don't know that I really want to subscribe to a theology that at the end of the day, whatever predicament I'm in that has become bad or challenging, that somehow God's the one to blame. Because it's like then you're not just in pain and abandoned, but you have no place to walk. You don't have anyone to walk through it with.
Yeah. Some of the big things I've learned on this journey is, number one, God is not as committed to my personal happiness as I thought he should be. I think that's true. I think on the other hand of it, God is not as afraid of pain as I am. The fact of pain is not proof of his absence, as you just said. And I think those two things, religion gives us the impression other than that God's goodness is a reward for getting it right, and that God doesn't want us to hurt. And I don't think God delights in our pain, but I don't think he fears it either. I don't think every bad thing that happens to us is purposed for some higher good. I think, like you said, stuff just happens, and we get caught in the chaos of this age, living outside of who God is and who the Creator is. But at the same time, He's using everything. He's at work in everything that goes on in our lives to will and to do of His good pleasure. He's in there to sort out, to make me a different person, to make me more loving, to make me more free, to be, as Paul and Timothy talked about, them being driven to extremities so that they could be a comfort to others. I mean, it's just amazing that God has put so many things in Scripture about, I want to be in your pain with you, walking you out, not this distant God getting barraged with all the blame because we perceive it's Him doing it to us. And I think religion has given us that false notion, and I think we need to get back to what God has really said is true about those things.
Well, I think what's so wonderful is that God is absolutely good. He's absolutely good. He loves us far more than we could even fathom. And in the midst of challenge and trying times, I mean, you know, I used to read James and think that James was a crack smoker, because it's like, how in the world can you rejoice when you experience diverse kinds of trials? And you're just going like, James, you're nuts. But when I look back on my life, and I don't like suffering. I don't wish it. Yeah, I don't,
you don't volunteer for it.
I don't want it.
You don't fill out requisition forms. More pain.
But the reality is you're going to have it in this life. And when I look back at what God has done, you know, that promise in Romans 8:28 that God is at work in all things. I don't think God has authored all things. But the lovely thing is God is at work. And He is going to conform me into the image of Jesus Christ. And I'm just sitting there going like, all right, I'm not sure exactly what could come against me that God cannot use. And if I'll simply put it in front of Him and say, all right, God, once again, I am bankrupt. I have nothing to offer here. I am in pain. Help me. Be with me. The great news is He comes in, He'll turn on the light, and He'll walk me out.
And He'll do a number of good things in the midst of all that. But before that happens, while we don't see Him and the anger is still there, I got a lovely call from Ed this morning. Ed's on the East Coast, and he actually called to talk to my answering machine because he called pretty early West Coast time, but I was in the office early this morning, so I picked up. And he was a little shocked and said, oh, I didn't expect you to answer your phone. I said, well, that's what you usually do when it rings. And but he told me, he said, you know, I'm so grateful for the podcast. He and his wife just got done listening to it. They've been through a kind of a betrayal thing by a senior pastor. I didn't get the details about it. And he said, you know what? Every day you just wake up and go, are we nuts? Are we not listening? Is it only us in all the world that can't seem to figure out what God's about? And somehow they landed on the podcast this morning, When Dreams Die. And he said, it just absolutely, you could tell his voice was cracking a bit, absolutely touched a deep place in their lives and gave them some basis to go on, even talk about the Joseph call. You know, when God calls you to have a position of great influence, He doesn't tell you that between now and then you're going to be kidnapped, thrown into prison, sold as a slave, falsely accused of rape, thrown into jail, betrayed by your best friend. Then maybe we'll get to the promise. And I just go, man, that is so funny, because that's true. God just doesn't roadmap it all. It's like, oh, you know what? This is going to be a smooth A, B, C, and D. And yeah, isn't it amazing? That's always what our expectations are. When I went through a huge betrayal in ministry, and a number of years ago, a good friend of mine, and I lost job, salary, friends, reputation. And a few months into that, I mean, I was just brutally hurting. I'm glad you find humor in it.
Oh, been there, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, you were relating. I get it. And I went up to my folks' place, because they live in the mountains, and I figure from the mountains, if you scream at God, it's going to sound a little louder because you're closer. So I was going up there just to spend some time up in the hills, having some of these honest moments with Him. And as I dropped my stuff off, didn't really want to talk to my folks much. Just said, you know what, I'm just going to go for a walk, and started out there and said, hey, before you go, let me read you something. And he pulls out the message, and he pulls out Matthew 5, and here's what he reads me. He says, not only that, count yourselves blessed every time people put you down or throw you out or speak lies about you to discredit me. What it means is that the truth is too close for comfort and they are uncomfortable. You can be glad when that happens. Give a cheer even. For though they don't like it, I do, and all heaven applauds, and you know that you are in good company. My prophets and witnesses have always gotten into this kind of trouble. I remember my dad reading that. I wasn't feeling blessed. I wasn't happy.
Take that Bible verse and shove it down. Yeah.
Lots of places I'd like to put that Bible verse, and my refrigerator door is not one of them. But I remember going out and giving it to God and talking, and this verse just kept coming back. God's not upset about where I'm at. God's not even surprised about where I'm at. God wanted me to understand there was something wonderful happening through all that pain, and that I could even give a cheer and count myself blessed. And you know what? From then on, what kind of took hold in my heart is every time I heard one of those rumors about me, or more than I heard them, I could hear them mentally. I heard them in my head. And every time I go, God, I just count it a blessing. I count it a blessing. I rejoice. I give a cheer that somehow you're at work in all this. And I'm going to give a cheer for the bad stuff. But I tell you what, that was liberating. I think that whole idea of God and Scripture is so clear. God is in the midst of that, helping us out. He's not just standing aside going, tis, tick, tis. I hope you get over this someday.
Well, I mean, in a universe where God has given human beings, I mean, however you define it theologically, we have decision-making power. And God doesn't force all of those decisions into lovely actions. And when individuals make some pretty bad decisions, it's rarely does it just affect their life alone. I mean, there's collateral damage.
Absolutely.
Left and right.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of times that you can simply be caught in the fray of someone else's bad decision-making. And, you know, If you subscribe to some theologies, at the end of the day, the God who began all of this allowed it. I mean, ultimately, it puts you at odds with him.
Yep.
And that is not a fun place to be. That's not much of a relationship. And it's like the reality is that isn't God. And God, I'm confident, will be able to meet us in the midst of our pain if we won't abandon it.
Even in the midst of our judgments of him.
Yeah.
Our misplaced judgment. How hard is it not to talk about Shaq here, Brad?
What Shaq?
Oh, many of you maybe not know. Brad and I have been involved with a brother helping get a manuscript ready for publication. The book's called The Shaq. It's a fictional story about God intervening in someone's pain. And it is witty, and it is clever, and it is insightful, and it'll make you laugh and make you cry. And it's hard because we get into conversation, we're going, have you read this? And then we realize, no, they haven't, and no, they can't. And good news is we're actually going to publishers this week. We have some open doors and some pretty large ones. So we're got that before some people. Your prayers about that would be greatly helpful.
Yeah, and if you're an editor out there, send those letters and cards coming.
Yeah, and if you know some publishers who you've got a link to some, we'd be interested in doing that because we're representing this ourselves. We've also looking to put this together into a movie form.
Yeah, coming to the theater soon.
So we're already working on a script and a movie and talking to investors. So if you got $15 million lying around, you'd like to invest in a movie.
Shameless plugs.
No, not plugs. Just asking the body of Christ for a little help. It might be good. One of the letters we received this week, though, is from Tyler, who's on our forum quite a bit. But I think she's been pretty honest on the forum about this, so I trust this isn't a problem. But here's how she responded to our letter from last week, When Dreams Die. She said, I really needed to hear Shelley's great letter. I say great because I am sick and tired of everyone always pretending that everything's okay. I've said those swear words before. I've even said them to God, even though I would never dream of accosting another person with them. You don't have to read the rest. She says, I'll just be venting. But here's a little bit of her life. My goodness. She said, I don't love anyone right now, and it seems like all I'm capable of is grief. One cousin in the hospital dying of a rare terminal condition, another killed in Iraq yesterday by a terrorist roadside bomb, my baby brother in a terrible car wreck last week. I'm in a great deal of pain each month. My husband's great boss left a company where God placed him. He's replaced with an abusive and cruel slave driver. My 5-year-old son still has spina bifida, and now he needs major surgery, and we are alone here in the middle of nowhere without friends or family. Wow. She says, I'm scared. I'm angry. I don't know how I can get through one more day. I am so tired. I know he is here, and I know he loves me, and I know he is watching me, but I am nearly spent, and I can't stand the way I am treating my kids and my husband as I retreat further and further into the shell of despair. My goodness, Tyler, man, our hearts go out to you. It just sounds like you've got a plate full of stuff.
That's just tough. There aren't any easy little fixes for that, because each one of those situations is just the reality of the hard things of life.
We're
not immune to them.
And any one of these would be huge.
Yeah.
I think the concern is 4 or 5 of them stacking up, and the fact that she said, you know, I just don't have any friends or family out in the middle of nowhere. I'm not sure where she's even from. But, you know, to me, that's the most alarming. At moments like this, it really helps to have some brothers and sisters who can just stand alongside you and say, man, I love you. God's big enough to get you through this. You don't need a bunch of them Job advisor religious types.
Yeah. Leave those guys out.
In fact, when I wrote her back, I said, I'd be praying that God just give you an older sister somewhere who understands him and can just hang out with you through some of what you're going through. Because this long, slow slide into despair that she describes, I've got a wonderful interview I did with a brother a little while back about his story of depression. We're looking for the right time to use it on a podcast, and talked about thoughts of suicide. And whenever he tried to share it with other believers wouldn't let him talk about it. It's, you know what, this is the day the Lord has made. We'll rejoice and be glad in it. And he kept trying to pretend his way out of depression. And it doesn't work. You just cannot do it. He found himself finally at the point of suicide, calling a hotline for help, and was committed for a time. I'm going to get his story on here because I think it's fascinating. But I don't want to say to people like this, the difference between last week we talked about Shelley. She's got some issues certainly in her life. I know them, actually. I've met her and her husband. I really do feel like this is a temporary setback in some things, and it's God adjusting some things in their life and marriage that's going to be incredibly wonderful for them for years and years to come. But, yeah, right now it is very, very painful. I don't know if this is true because email is a lousy way to try and parse out exactly what people are dealing with. But for others who feel like, you know what, I keep trying to find a way out, and I feel like I'm going further and further in depression, I just want to say, take that seriously. Don't just say, oh, my goodness, I don't know what I'm going to do, and I hope God comes through someday. And that's not what we're trying to say to people. He will come through someday. He's that kind of a God. But in the middle of us missing him or not seeing clearly or whatever, my heart is that people will get some help, hopefully with an older brother or sister who understands who Jesus is. But if not that, then I've even said, you know, I've encouraged people to go to secular counselors.
I hear a cow tipping.
Oh, okay, there is. And I know it's scary for people because, you know, well, they don't have the wisdom of God and stuff, but you know what? Most Christian counselors are Job's counselors. They're going to throw, not every one of them, some are great, but some of them don't get it. Some of them just, you're going through this because you need to be living right. You got, and all the performance issues that only drive the depression deeper. And that's what I think some quote unquote Christian counselors don't get. I think a secular counselor at least take depression seriously and guilt seriously and help somebody, if they're any good at all, walk out of that. And that may not be their final answer. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's not. But it might be a crutch to get them through a place of pain and not do something really stupid in the midst of depression that'll harm themselves or others. Yeah. And so, man, yeah, get to that if you need it. And if you need it, I don't think a crutch is a bad thing. People say, it's like a crutch. Well, you know, if my leg's broken, I don't think a crutch is a bad thing.
You need a Christian crutch?
It's not a final answer, but it is a way to hold the leg immobile so it has a chance to heal. I think people, sometimes you take some drugs to help ease the emotional pain of things, and people say, oh, you shouldn't do that, you know, Christian. I say, you know what? If you need a crutch, you need a crutch. Just don't let it be your final answer. There's a way to get to God in the midst of stuff like this that is transforming.
You know, what I think is behind a lot of the quote Christian counseling that's always tying something to performance is, I think there's an underlying fear. There has to be a reason you're going through this, because if not, it could hit me too.
That's right.
And there's that sense of illusion of control that if I can just simply dedicate myself to doing the best I know, that somehow that makes me immune from the adverse circumstances of life. And it's like, that just is a false universe. That's a false hope, and it's a false reality, because it just isn't true. Life happens. It can hit you square in the face. It can
pile up on you, till you're just overwhelmed.
And the good news is not that, gee, if you just behaved in these ways, that would never happen. Because I would think that's bad news, because I don't know about you, but I just don't always string together a whole run of those kind of days without slipping up.
Yep.
The good news is that I got a God who's more powerful than that, who will not abandon me in that, and who will not forsake me in my failure. It's like, this could be all of my own creating. Just say some of Job's counselors were true, and I have authored all of my own pain. The good news of this gospel God doesn't abandon you then either.
Absolutely not.
And he doesn't love you any less.
Yep. I hope we get letters from Shelley and from Tyler down the road as they get to the end of the chapter. And there's breakthroughs and there's depth in their life. And there's things that have shifted and transitioned and grown. And the marriages have changed because the pressure has brought about that kind of deal. One of my favorite stories in the last few years has been Nancy from Texas that we've talked about a couple of times. Had a 24-year-old daughter commit suicide. I posted her story. Some of you want to read some of her story in her own words. I posted on my Lifestream blog. You can go to Lifestream.org and get to it from there. But I did it for Mother's Day because the story of the transformation in this woman in the last 3 years is amazing. She was at the point of suicide in a dark room all by herself. And from that to where she is now, guys, God has walked her out of that. Comes up on this Mother's Day, even telling me there's a celebration in her heart over her motherhood for Aaron and even the pain and the loss of Aaron, but that God is in that as well. If God's in stuff like that, my goodness, he can crawl into anything and help us get out.
That's good news
for all of us. We had some of the folks on our forum playing with a sign someone saw at Arts Fair. I love this. The sign said, "When God closes one door, he opens another." Now, we've all heard that, but we not all have heard this last tagline. But it is hell in the hallway. Oh, man. Is that true?
Such truth.
When you stand in the dark between the door you can see that's closed and the open door you can't see somewhere down the hallway, it is hell in the hallway.
Hell in the hallway.
No
Woo!
Doubt
all right.
About it. And I think we all have times that we go through that. And hopefully we're learning. I think if people can grasp the kinds of things that we're talking about, how God responds to our suffering, then we're going to know how to be with people in their suffering. And instead of, you know, bashing them with stuff and trying to blame something or find a higher purpose in our pain, we're just going to help people find him in the midst of it. And we don't have to figure out, is this God doing something? Is this just the strangeness of life? Is this the enemy thwarting? I don't know that those answers are really important. I think it's just, what is God doing? What light has he given me? How do I put one foot in front of the other and follow the light and let him accomplish in me all that he wants to do? And I tell you, I look back over a number of years of living through this way. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I think it's absolutely a hoot.
No, there's things that have changed in my life that you're just going to like, I do not think the fruit of a billion blessings would ever have produced some of the things that have transacted in my own heart. And you look back and it's like, I don't like adversity and I don't court it. But when you think of people,
you're not sending out requisitions for more.
No.
Me either.
When you think of people who are an incredible comfort in the midst of misery, they're people who do have the capacity for long suffering. You know, they don't have to have a bunch of answers. They sometimes know their presence is just enough. And someone that can just sit with you and be with you and share life in the midst of the hell in the hallway, that's the kind of person you want to put your hand, you know, on and just simply walk down that hallway with. And I think Jesus is just that for us.
And that's the kind of people we want to become too, isn't it? So we
yeah.
can represent him that way with other people, to weep with those who weep, which, I don't know, I think in religion we don't weep well with folks who weep. We don't mind rejoicing with those who rejoice, but we don't know how to just, yeah, this really sucks. This is painful. And doggone it, let's just listen to God and watch for him and let him do what he's going to do.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I've watched just my wife Kelly, you know, with the kids, and sometimes, you know, Taylor, when she's tired, you know, she's four, and we learned the wisdom of, you know, when your kids, you know, kind of squalling, halt. That means they're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And frankly, I think that's true not just of four-year-olds. I think that may well be true of adults. And she just has the presence of mind at times. I'm always going like, stop crying. You know?
Grow up.
And Kelly just sometimes just holds her and lets her cry, knowing that, you know what, that's part of what God has designed us to do. That is sort of like a safety valve to let the pressure out. And sometimes that's just what's needed. And, you know, sure, that can be manipulative. Sure, there's a lot of things that a four-year-old can do with tears. But the reality is they're not bad. They can be precious. And if we can learn to share them with each other, that'd be fantastic.
There's a lot adults can do with tears, too, that isn't the best. But I think you're right. I think God regards those times of sincere honesty and struggle and pain very graciously and says, I'm going to come alongside you and work your way out of that.
Well, you got one last letter you wanted to read, don't you?
Oh, I thought this was so fun. Richard and Margie, if you're out driving this afternoon, I'll give you a little shout out here. Here's what they do. They said, this is what we do each weekend. We go for a long drive, and on the way, we pop in a CD of the podcast, stop it several times to discuss what we just heard, and then resume listening. We look forward to this every week. Isn't that a great way to spend a Saturday? For many years, we felt like we were all alone on this journey, but now we are so grateful to the Lord for providing the opportunity to interact with other like-minded believers and to learn from their travel experiences. Thank you, Wayne and Brad, for being conduits of the dynamic flow of life.
Oh, that's great.
That just sounds, I think one of the things that I wanted most out of this podcast when we began is that people would feel that way. Instead of feeling all alone in the world with these things that we're seeing, questioning, and struggling with, that if they just heard a couple of knuckleheads with microphones. A
couple of yahoos.
Talking through their bit of the journey and things they're learning and seeing and struggling with, that would give impetus to some great fellowship. Not only on the forum, but I love a marriage just listening to it together and yakking about it. That's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, we can't affirm that you're not crazy. Because we might be
crazy.
But we can't affirm that you're not alone.
And we hope if you're on your drive right now, you guys are having a great afternoon. Richard and Margie, be blessed.
Other than that, have fun in the hallway.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your comments or your questions by email or at our website, thegodjourney.com. Stop by today and join the conversation.